This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We had a great time earlier today out at Mariners Media Day. Tons of media out there. Scott Service is out there. John Stanton's out there. Cal Raleigh, Teoscar Hernandez. It was just a big gathering, getting everybody primed and ready for the upcoming season. And we had a chance to sit down with the president of baseball operations. He invited us up to his office. How cool is that? So we had a nice conversation with Jerry DePoto. Take a listen.
Jerry, here we are getting ready for spring training. Now that you look at the offseason, do you feel like, all right, mission accomplished? We addressed everything we had in mind.
I don't know if we addressed everything we had in mind. I feel like, you know, and as far as mission accomplished, we've made progress. Yeah. You know, and for me, every day of the 365, it's just continue to make progress, whatever that looks like, keep moving forward. You know, we'd like to add more. And could that happen in the course of the next couple of weeks before we report to spring training? Possible. You know, I'd say unlikely, but it's still possible. We're grinding every day. But I do think we got meaningfully better. You know, we have a full season from Luis Castillo, a full season from George Kirby, you know, at least in theory. Healthy versions of those two pitchers make us a different team, you know. We have Colton Wong, Teoscar Hernandez, A.J. Pollock, Tommy La Stella who join, and I think each one of them represents, you know, a move forward for us in terms of the potential for impact and what these guys bring to the dance. We get Tom Murphy back who, you know, I don't think it gets enough credit. You know, the difference that Tom Murphy provides as the backup to Cal, as opposed to, you know, constantly trying to finger paint what the backup catcher position looks like for almost an entire season. And that included, you know, a number of different faces, none of whom really created traction. So, you know, getting Murph back, big deal for us. You know, the June to end of season version of Andres Munoz was very different than the April-May version of Andres Munoz. And, you know, and that's just the nature of growing young players. So we feel great about what we have and our ability to get better with this group of players.
Jerry, you did such a good job of building up your farm system. How hard is that to trade those guys away? I mean, obviously that's what they're there for, but is that particularly difficult because you feel like you've scouted those guys from when they were, you know, teenagers?
You really do. And I thought last year in particular, the second trade, actually both trades we made with the Reds were so painful because we were giving up players that we were invested in emotionally. You know, not just from a financial perspective, not just from a coach and development perspective, but they were part of the family. And, you know, and that's the hard part about this is that it is, you know, you are constantly making moves. And, you know, seeing the look on Brandon Williamson's face when we told him that he was, you know, no longer a Mariner, you know, negotiating with at least one of the players that he couldn't stay, that he had to go. And, you know, that's a very different feeling than the day you draft them and it's, you know, they're going through the system and they believe that they'll be part of the next world championship or the first world championship for the Mariners. And that's hard.
Just back to the offseason, I think a lot of fans always ask, you know, how do you guys come to the number? Does John Stanton and the ownership group come to you and say, Jerry, here's what you got to work with. Make it happen. Or is it sort of flexible where you could go to him and go, hey, John, I know you gave us this number, but here's this guy we love. Puts us over that number a bit. Is there flexibility or is it here's the drop dead number and whatever you can do within these confines is what you do?
So it's the latter of those. You know, we get a number, you know, typically before the holiday season starts, sometime in you know, October, early November, we're going to get a budget number like every other team does. You know, what we have generally learned through the years, there is flexibility for, you know, if we have, you know, the ability to maximize an opportunity or to go out and make a difference-making move that puts us over that budget number, we've never been told no on that. You know, it's a... You know, but we're generally going to be responsible in building a team that we think has a chance to sustain. And what I think people tend to lose sight of is, you know, the free agent you know, bonanza that you look at, you're not just adding that player for a year. You know, you're adding that player for an indefinite period of time. You know, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, and in this market, it could be 12 or 13. You know, and when you make moves like that, you are making decisions in that moment that are going to affect what happens down the line. And we're always conscious of that. You know, sometimes it changes our decision. Sometimes, you know, it helps us make a sound decision. But, you know, we're always thoughtful of what it does for this team and what it does for the next two or three or five teams. And, you know, we have to stay conscious of that. It's part of our job.
You mentioned in the press conference Luis Castillo and how he just changed the way players thought. Can you kind of expound on that a little bit?
You know, Louis arrived right about the time that we were cresting, and we played phenomenally well, you know, headed into the All-Star break and then coming out of the break, you know, once we ascended to one of those wild card positions, and, you know, there was some buzz about the Mariners nationally, and when The Rock walks through the door and he throws that first game in New York, I think we already had a group of young players that knew that they were good, that we are a good team, we're ready to make a move. And I think when Castillo walked in the door, there was a belief that, all right, everyone's with us, the organization's with us, this is a championship quality team. And then they played that way, and, you know, we went toe to toe with the Yankees, which was, you know, has not been our forte in recent years, and played them very well at their place, and then again when they came here, and I think that increased the confidence. It's, you know, I wish we would have had more opportunity in the second half of the season to encounter the Astros. We did most of our Astros head to heads in the first half, before a lot of the things we talked about earlier, before Luis joined the club, before George Kirby hit a different level in his own development, you know, before we saw the escalated, you know, performance from Cal Raleigh, from Andres Munoz, a variety of different players that just took it to a different place. And curious to see. I mean, we got a pretty good look, you know, for 36 innings, and that we can match up with a team like that. And we think they're the best team in our league.
We heard down there in the press conference that Luis will not be pitching in the WBC, which is such a great thing for baseball. But I imagine as a GM, you're looking at your players going, yeah, it's great. They should be watching it and not participating. You don't want anybody to get hurt. So that, I think that's great news for Mariner fans. But is that a negotiation with each player? Because obviously they want to go represent their country. Do you talk to each guy and try to sway him that it's better just to go to spring training, or what's that conversation like?
You know, mostly we support what the player wants to do. You know, Julio very much wanted to go play for Team DR. We supported it. You know, same with Teoscar Hernandez. Matt Brash, you know, he made a critical decision to the arc of his season by determining on this end, I want to play for Team Canada, even if it means that I'm a reliever. So it's important to players. We support it when it's important to them. The other part of this developmentally is that you just can't replicate the moments that you'll run into in the WBC in a spring training game. And provided, you know, like Teo, like Julio, that these guys are going to get their reps and they're going to play regularly, it's a better exposure than we can provide them in a spring training game. You know, the spring training games are fun, they're relaxed, an intimate environment. The WBC games, it is on. It is like playoff baseball at its best when teams are out there busting it for their country. And to the extent that we can push players toward that or back them when they want to do it, we do. You know, ideally, it's not a host of your starting pitchers, but, you know, especially with the position players and the bullpen guys, we advocate for it. And if we have starting pitchers who want to do it, we've supported them in the past, like with Drew Smyly, like with Felix. We'll support them again in the future if they want to do it. But, you know, in this case, we were fortunate that a handful of guys chose to be in camp with us as opposed to going.
Just a note, you brought up Drew Smyly. We didn't. but Brash, it was an interesting comment you made there. It sounds like had he not gone to the WBC, he'd be looking at a starter position as opposed to now he's going to the WBC, thus he's a bullpen guy. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, so we brought him. We were bringing him to camp, stretched out to go compete for, you know, a spot at the back of the rotation, like he did a year ago. And if it didn't work out, then we back him up to the bullpen role and allow him to continue to make impact there. The great likelihood is that our fifth starter is going to be, you know, Marco Gonzalez, perhaps Chris Flexen. Matt knew he was running uphill in that regard, and he knows that he's an impact player for us in that bullpen role. So I think he made a calculated gamble. I'd rather go pitch for Team Canada, because I think the outcome here is going to be the same, is that I'm going to wind up in the bullpen. But we made sure that that was the case. And, you know, we don't mind building up innings on the front end and then easing into a relief role. We don't want to build up innings into relief, back to start. And it's just, that's when it gets messy and when you might put players in a difficult position.
You're probably tired of answering questions about Jared Kelnick, right? I mean, he's kind of the big question mark. But I think did you draw a parallel with Kyle Wright, I think, a little bit? I mean, is he the kind of guy that maybe you need to back off a little bit, kind of save him from himself, because he seems pretty intense?
Yeah, he is intense, and he's. We've learned that about JK through the years. We love him. No player we have works any harder than Jared does. He will spend every minute of his day thinking about how he can get better, and in his case, how he can be great. But, you know, his path hasn't been linear. He's a spectacular prospect from high school to Team USA to every stop in the minors. He's hit. He's done whatever you ask him to do. He has had a tough time putting it together consistently in the big leagues. You know, that being said, and I said this jokingly last week, he's younger than both of the starting quarterbacks in last year's national championship game. You know, he's still a very young player by the standards of even prospects in our league. And, you know, we will have prospects lining up in A-ball that we really like who are older than Jared Kelnick, which is pretty phenomenal to think about when he's already, you know, accrued a full minor league career and 500 plate appearances in the big leagues. He's uber talented. It's not always linear, like it happened for J.P. Crawford, like, you know, an extreme example with Kyle Wright in Atlanta. You know, if you just believe in the talent, and you believe in the work, and you keep providing opportunity, you know, what we did this year is we built a higher net for him so that, you know, the opportunity is there. But with A.J. Pollock, with Tommy La Stella, veterans who have been down the road and can go put on a major league at bat, we don't feel like we're throwing J.K. into a pit and saying we don't swim unless you swim with us, and I think that's going to be helpful to him.
How do you think the presence of Julio impacts him? To me, I look at it two ways. A, he could look at it and go, that's supposed to be me. I was the prospect with all the shine, and that should be me. Or you could look at it the other way and go, everybody's focused on this guy, so some of the pressure and expectation is off of me. Maybe that lightens the load a bit. How do you see that impact with Julio and him?
You know, I don't think the second part of those is in JK's DNA. You know, I think his want to achieve, you know, he'll look at Julio. He played with him at each step along the way. You know, they played together in A-ball and on up the ladder. They were back to back on the big prospect lists in the industry. And I imagine that the first of those, which is looking at Julio saying, you know, that should be me. In JK's case, I think it's that will be me. You know, I know I have that in me. And he'll go out there and work to make it happen. And really do believe that he's continued to make progress. We see all kinds of, there's a ton of information under the hood to suggest good things are happening for Jared, even on the field. And, you know, will the shift, you know, the ban on shifting help him? It absolutely should, because the shifts have really hurt him. He hits the ball as hard as anybody we have, including Julio, who's one of the hardest hitters in the league. And it's just a matter of finding consistency in the box and just breathing through the at-bats. And some of that just comes with experience, which we're just going to continue to provide.
So, Jerry, this is probably like asking you to name your favorite child, but who are you most excited to see this year of maybe somebody that we haven't heard about?
You know, I've said this before on your airwaves. I'm very excited to see Bryce Miller as we get to camp. Bryce was a fourth-round pick for us a couple of years ago. What we thought was one of the 10 best players in the draft when his draft year began. He got off to an awesome start and then struggled. And the struggle actually led him to falling to our pick a little later in the draft. And, you know, since he's been in our system, he's got what we think is the highest impact fastball in the minor leagues, not just in the Mariners system. You know, he throws between 97 and 101 miles an hour. He rides it as well as anybody in baseball can ride it. He's got a plus-plus slider now and a developing changeup. His command has come a long way in just the time he's been in our minor league system. He ran through to Double A last year, and we think in a normal scenario would have a chance to compete as a major league starter as early as, you know, mid-season this year, if not sooner. You know, he may get a crack sooner than that in our bullpen, much like we did, you know, with Matt Brash. It's just give him an opportunity to make an impact on what we think is a good team, because if we feel like he is one of our best 13 arms, we're going to keep our best 13 arms. And Bryce is going to excite some people in the spring.
Did you have a definitive opinion on the shift one way or the other? Because I was kind of the guy in the middle that said, I like the idea that it's there, the gamesmanship, it's the chess move. Now it's up to the offense to make that team pay for what they're doing. But then the other part is, boy, there's a reluctance from some guys to go the other way. They want to roll over on the ball and keep trying to pull it, so we're not seeing action. Did you favor teams trying to adjust to make the team pay, or are you like, this is not good for the game, let's get rid of it?
You know, ultimately, I arrived at the latter of that, you know, which is that it's better for the game to do what we're doing now and to create, you know, to put two players back on each side of second base and keep the feet on the dirt. Reluctantly, we were good at it. You know, we were good at shifting, turning, you know, batted balls into outs. And the funny thing is, it's not really a reluctance on the part of major league hitters to go the other way. It's really hard to hit right now. You know, I just described Bryce Miller, who might be one of our 13 best pitchers, you know, at some point this season. He's throwing 100 with a wicked slider and he throws strikes. And that's hard to hit. And, you know, Andrés Muñoz, Paul Sewald from angles, you name it. And you walk up to the plate in the major leagues right now, and it's just harder to hit than it has ever been in Major League Baseball. And, you know, with the physical stuff that comes out of pitchers' hands and with the shifts. So, you know, altering the shifts at least gives the hitter a fighting chance, because it's not a matter of deciding whether you're going to go the other way. In today's game, there might be a dozen hitters who actually have the ability to make that choice. You know, they're just fighting for their lives trying to put a barrel on the ball. You know, it's a testament to the quality of pitching such as it is now. And like we've seen before in baseball history, it will cycle the other way. I just don't know when that's going to come. Maybe it starts with you know, the onset of shifting roles.
Brash is kind of an interesting character, just because we hear a lot about him from, you know, from everybody. Ryan Roland Smith, if you want to believe that guy. But, you know, he seems like he's really special. And you said, you know, he's definitely a bullpen guy going into this season.
Yeah, Brash, his stuff might be pitch for pitch about as good as anybody in the league. And, you know, he doesn't really have the change of pace. You know, it's more power, power, more power. But throws in the mid-upper 90s. He's got crazy carry on his four-seam fastball. He's got insane run on his two-seam fastball. He's right now working on a cutter through this offseason that I think, you know, he introduced it a little bit last September, and it's likely to become a bigger part of his arsenal this year, which hopefully is a pitch that he can just steal a strike with. His curveball and slider combos on a scale of 20 to 80 both rank 70 or 80. He just has dynamic stuff. And, you know, it's the big thing for Matt has been combating his, you know, his ability to locate. Once we moved him to the bullpen role, shortened up the outings, and he could just go out there and be athletic and attack, the strikes got a lot better, the command got better, and his bat missing stuff always stood up. So, you know, he's an impact arm regardless of where he pitches. It might one day be as a starter. We know he can be an impact guy in the bullpen, and he's got courage. You know, he's not afraid to go out there and pitch against the best hitters in the league. He wants to show them what he can do, which is pretty fun.
Of the young guys at the minor league system, offensively speaking, who do you think's closest to coming up with the big club? That maybe it's somebody we haven't talked about. Maybe it's Cade Marlowe. I don't. Looking at the offense, seems to be the soft spot, if you will, that needs the help. So who's the young guy you look at and say, this is somebody who could help us in the next year or maybe this season later? Who would that be?
You know, of those who we've not seen yet, some of it's going to be just the traction that we get with, you know, the Taylor Trammells and the Jared Kelnicks, the guys you've seen before. Of those who've not yet appeared in a major league game, Cade Marlowe is the closest, and it's not even really close in that regard. You know, Cade does just about everything well on a baseball field. plays all three spots. He hits. He uses the field to hit. He's got power. He can run. He's been one of the best performers in the minor leagues, period, over the last 2 years. And he's done it from A-ball all the way to AAA and put himself on the doorstep. He's the guy that could break through and help. You know, that being said, we are probably about a year out from having another wave of offensive talent. Guys like Harry Ford, Tyler Locklear, last year's second-round pick, who we're really excited about, Cole Young, who we think is going to fly. And then we've got a group of young players down at our complex level, guys like Gabby Gonzalez, who reached Modesto by the end of the season this year, guys like Axel Sanchez, who came up to Modesto after the second Cincinnati trade, and more recently, prospects like Felnin Celestine, Michael Arroyo, and Laz Montes, who've come through our DR programs. We have a lot of talent, you know, and right now we're in a gap where in the last 3 years we have had a steady flow of two or three, maybe four potential everyday or impact players arriving at the big leagues. You know, this year I don't think we're going to see that on the position or on the position player side. I do think we have a couple of pitchers who can provide that, you know, led by Bryce Miller.
Jerry, we always appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
You got it. Got to join.
There you go. Jerry DePoto. A lot of fun talking to him. Good stuff out of him. And, you know, you sense the he's just ear-to-ear smile. You can tell they're excited, too. Just can't wait for that season to begin.
Everybody, man. I mean, you know, we talked to Service, and then same thing with John Stanton and, you know, Cal Raleigh in his own reserved kind of way seemed really excited as well. So, yeah, it's couldn't love Cal anymore, man. He is just – he's such a great – piece to that team, and just so what you need. I would, if I was the skipper, I would lean on him hard.
Yeah, he seems to have the respect of everybody there, and certainly he's become, you know, a local folk hero after, you know, banging one off the windows of the Hit It Here Cafe to send this team to the postseason. I mean, come on, pinch in, bottom of the ninth, two outs. How do you get more dramatic than that?
That's, forgot about that, the pinch hit.
That's a Disney movie, man. That's like, okay, come on, The Natural, you know, knocking out the lights and that one of those kind of moments. But it happened. You know, it's just amazing. And as Cal says, yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
By the way, the 253 says, Dave, how can you like Adam Ray? He smokes pot.
That's what makes him so funny.
Yeah,
he can do it in that industry.
Yeah, it doesn't have a negative impact on him. By the way, he sent me a thing. He's got a new special coming out. It'll be Adam Ray Best of Minneapolis 2023. It comes out February 3rd on YouTube, on his YouTube channel. And I played you a little clip, a little promo clip he sent me. So check that out, Adam Ray on YouTube, coming up at the 3rd. What's today? The 1st. So 2 days from now.
Brand you will special. Laugh. You will laugh.
He's a funny guy. He is a funny, funny guy. All right. Our thanks to Jerry DePoto. If you missed any of that, check out the podcast page after the show, seattlesports.com. Meanwhile, will the NFL ever fix its officiating issues? We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Once again, our thanks to Jerry DePoto for joining us on the program. Really, really good stuff out of him. It'll be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Meanwhile, I was thinking about this last night, Dave. You know, we talk about the NFL, just they win. They just, you know, great weekend. Everything they do generates money. Everything is they've been able to monetize everything. The combine is now becoming a bigger event every year. The draft moves from city to city, and it's just a huge event. Obviously, the Super Bowl. It's just amazing their impact and how much revenue they generate and everything. They've got the best of everything. The one thing they haven't been able to fix, and we were asking yesterday, the one thing they don't get right is the Pro Bowl. They haven't been able to nail that. Well, the one thing I was thinking about last night is, like, what about the officiating? That's been a complaint for decades. And you'd think with all of the wherewithal that they've got, they could put 1,000 cameras in every stadium if they wanted. You know, they've got the financial wherewithal to address it, whether it's an eye in the sky type thing or cameras at every angle, or they have the means. They've got the resources and technology should they want to view it that way. We talked to Stink yesterday, and I asked about the weekend. Remember, we're like, did you feel like the officiating was worse than it normally is because people feel like the NFL's rigged and all that stuff? Here's how he answered that.
Well, let me just ask you this. At what point did you think officiating was good in this league? It's garbage.
So it was consistent.
It was no different than any other week.
Yeah, I guess what you could do with technology and everything, because there's lots of times where you see the officials, they'll have like one official has the front five, you know, he's really looking at the line of scrimmage and, you know, but there's not somebody looking at every single player. So if you really wanted to get it exactly right on every single play, you would have like a camera or enough officials out there to watch every single player. And I guess that would be the extreme, you know, that I'm thinking of, if you want to get everything exactly right. And that's why, you know, I was saying that, was it DeAndre Smith, the catch, the one-handed catch, and he brings it in, yeah, and he falls on the ground, but then the ball moves, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, isn't that just a catch?
I mean, some of it's interpretation, certainly, yeah, but we see just ridiculous inconsistency when it comes to roughing the quarterback. And I have lamented that for a while now, where one guy will kind of land on a quarterback and it's, you know, flags everywhere. The other guy has the perfect form tackle, doesn't land on him, he gets a flag, and then somebody drills a quarterback and there's no flag. It's like, it just seems to depend on the crew you get, and there's no it just feels like with everything they've got at their disposal, with as many eyes as they've got, we've just been talking about the ratings, that's the one thing they could address, not get perfect, but maybe address it to the point where it'd be impossible to legitimately even contemplate the idea that something's not on the up and up, which I still think is absurd.
Well, but I think that's such a fringe thought,
yeah,
that it shouldn't even be like considered. Like that's not what goes into any change that you make.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the motivation for change.
Yeah, I don't think that that's really, I mean, really, it's just a few people texting in or a few people tweeting, which a few people these days is, you know,
that means
thousands.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But could they do better?
Well, I think as far as that part, the roughing the passer thing, yeah. Remember, there was a ridiculous hold a hold that was missed again in the Super Bowl last year, and it was against the Rams. And I'm trying to remember exactly.
It was a call that was not made.
Yeah. And it was a receiver on the sidelines, and, you know, everybody, but, you know, the Rams ended up winning the game. But if you know, I'm thinking if they had lost that game, you know, it might have been the other way around. But either way, you know, like, it didn't affect the outcome. It was against the team that won anyway. So, and it was a bad call or a bad no call. But, you know, I think it's kind of, Cal was today saying something about, was he talking about the umpires?
He was talking about the automatic
strike.
Asked him about
zone.
How do you feel about an automated strike zone? And
he was against it, right?
He's not a fan.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like I'm that way too. I would rather see.
You'd rather complain about the umpires.
Well, I like complaining about it. And, you know, and I think that there is some of that in the NFL. I mean, there's a certain amount of that. That's part of the game. And whether you like it or not, in my day, it used to be that you didn't even know who the officials were. I knew a guy's first name just because I introduced myself to him, and we, you know, worked a number of games together. But, you know, you didn't know, oh, this is Gene Steratore, or this is Hussey, or whoever.
This is Ed Hockley.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like they were just no names, and now they're just a little bit more a part of the game. And, you know, I guess a part of me says, look, as long as there's not you know, a bunch of ridiculous calls in a row so that it, like, okay, they obviously want this team to win, this team to lose. It's just complaining. Like, it kind of, at the end of the day, and this is what you're taught as a football player, is that, you know, do not complain about the officiating. Do not. Mm-hmm. That's on you. There's a bunch of plays you could have made. You know, sometimes you get plays, you know, called your way. There's things that I got away with a lot of times that, you know, that I was like, I remember one time there was a guy that blocked me, and he got a holding penalty, and we're kind of standing around. He's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And he looks at me, and I go, that wasn't holding. I mean, so, you know, as long as it doesn't, you know, dictate the outcome of a game, but it would have to be like 15-2 as far as calls one side or the other. And I just don't think it's that big of a problem. But the one thing that does come to mind is the ridiculous roughing the passer penalty. I mean,
it's
I'm sorry
inconsistent.
If you if it has to do with gravity or momentum, those aren't things that you can fix.
Well, even though some of the hits on the quarterback that aren't really hits, like they swat at the ball and the fingertip taps the helmet, they'll call it sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't. Again, a guy landing on a quarterback, another guy barely leans a shoulder on him, almost lays him down, gets a flag. The guy that planted him didn't. It's sort of like the strike zone in baseball. Just be consistent. You're going to call that low and away all night?
Yeah.
Okay, I can work with that. We see it vary from game to game to game. So that led me to just think, all right, how come this is so inconsistent? You've got everything at your disposal. Is it off-season training? Is it pay guys more to get the best of the best there at all? I mean, they've got everything at their disposal. So,
and some people were complaining about, you don't need to be an official year-round. That's ridiculous. What are they going to do in the off-season? I'm like, I could think of all kinds of things that they could do. They could watch film. They could make them run. You know, I've said this before. Make them run through some kind of an obstacle so they get the taste of what, as far as your reaction time, there's a speed limit for humans, you know, that you can't. You show those plays in super slow-mo, and, he shouldn't have done that. Well, let's let some of these officials go out there and say, okay, put your hands up, put them down. You know, don't put your hands down on the, you know. I mean, obviously it's sort of a pie-in-the-sky thing, you know, having them run through some kind of, they need to understand.
Open to all ideas, because I think that's the one area they've lagged behind. We talk about them just nailing everything they do. They win, they win, they win. This is a consistent, I mean, that's a, you know, Schlereth's a credible guy with Super Bowl rings, who's been in the league a long time with you, and there he is. His first response to that is, when has it ever been good? And I know he's trying to get a laugh on some level, but he believes it. I mean, he went on to explain that he thinks it's not any good. So why is that such a continuous problem when you do have the means to address it in any way you see fit?
Well, I don't know why, because the NFL can, you know, get better at that. And that's something that, you know, hopefully that's what is the most of the conversation that comes out these couple of weeks, is how to do that. But I do think that you can go too far, though, because then, like I said, if you have a camera on every single guy and you're breaking down every single, you know, holding penalty and things like that, it could take up a whole bunch of time, first of all. And secondly, you're probably going to get, you know, like there's a penalty that occurs on almost every play that doesn't get called. But, yeah, I would address the major ones. I mean, I get that they want to protect the quarterback, and that's part of the reason why they called that hit on Patrick Mahomes. But I mean, it was also very obvious that that's not one that you
there was
should.
No gray area on that one.
Yeah, but
some were pointing out, as I said, the hashtag NFL rigged was trending, and a lot of videos were attached of plays that they missed. And one of them was interesting. 49er fans were mad that they didn't call a penalty on the 49ers on a play where who's the third string backup? Josh Johnson,
yeah.
He fumbled the ball, remember, turned the ball over. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a false start by both tackles.
Yeah.
They didn't call it. So the play should have been blown dead, and everybody's mad. They should have thrown a flag on us. That shouldn't have been a turnover. They did miss it. When you look at the play, they missed it. And then there's a block in the back on this punt return or this kick return that looked obvious when you isolate it and look at it.
Yeah, there was like 10 times over the weekend where I was like, I thought the tackles are leaving early in both games.
Yeah.
You know, like they need to get that part down. Pete's always all over the side judge on that, about that. But, yeah, I don't think, again, I would go back to the whole thing, because somebody was just saying that it's absolutely ridiculous and let's throw the conversation out of year-round refs and what are they going to do all year. I'm like, really? Really?
I think they could do a lot.
Yeah,
I think there's
plenty of things that they could do. Looking at film, you know, like I said, getting in shape, you know.
Sit there with them and grade the film with that guy right there.
Yeah, and then have the players come in and talk to them about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and have them like, okay, you called this penalty on me. How am I supposed to stop? How am I supposed to stop my momentum?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot they could do. There's certainly, in that instance, in terms of offseason, without question. All right, coming up, MLB Network released its list of the top 10 starting pitchers, and there's one big omission. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
They're unveiling the top 10 starting pitchers right now, Dave, and I mean that both right now they're unveiling them and right now as they see them. So not so much about who they were last season, but who they are currently heading into 2023 is I guess, the parameters from which they're working with. So they've Lefko's going nuts back there. They're driving him crazy because they're just...
I feel like Ryan Roland Smith. We can't get in what we need to because Brian Kenny won't stop talking.
That did happen.
Oh, yes.
That did happen.
It did, and it does.
Yeah.
That's a guy with a lot of words, man.
He's got lots of words.
Oh, goodness gracious. I was telling Lefko, he seems like a guy that if you were in a room with him for too long, you walk out, you'd just be exhausted. Right. Like, he'd just wear you out. Somebody with that kind of he's frenetic. He's got a lot of words, a lot of energy.
Yeah, it's not very popular, but sometimes at the house, I will say, I'll stop a conversation and just say, too many words. Too many.
You say Sorry. That's not popular?
Too many words, yeah. It doesn't go over.
That's weird.
It's like my brother always, my brother says, if you want to get from A to B, you want the least words possible.
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to get this story. You're getting the story out. I need about 70% less words.
Yeah, it doesn't go over well. That's weird. I would have thought they'd think that was great. I like when Dad says that, or I like when my husband says that. That's awesome. I can't wait for him to do it again. That's the best.
Yeah.
So we've got a list, Lefko, right? We got a partial list right now.
Well, I need Dave to spoil the end because we don't know the top two. We have everything else on there.
Well, though. This is perfect. He can't spoil it.
I know.
So
we need him to, though. I need to know who one and two are.
I'll find a way.
Okay. Well, start from 10.
Let me call somebody that I know at MLB Network. I don't know.
They've got 10 through 3 right now. So at 10, you've got Julio Urias. You've got Jacob DeGrom at number 9. You've got Zach Wheeler at 8. You've got Max Fried at 7. Shohei Ohtani. Actually, I thought Shohei would be a little higher. I'm surprised he's at 6. Mm. And this is just their...
This is MLB Network, the thing that, those positions, the Mariners have been well represented. It's like Colton Wong was on it, Ty France,
right.
Teoscar Hernandez, Julio.
And catchers are
Andres
tomorrow,
Munoz.
Right?
Yes.
So we'll see if the big dumper makes it in there.
And that's the final one. They've done every position. Catchers rounded out tomorrow.
Right. And outfielders were just out. It wasn't by left field.
No, they did.
Did they go left field, center field, right
field?
Teoscar was they did.
Like
they
9 and Julio was 7 or something, but they were both on it.
They do relievers?
Yes, Andres Munoz was the
one. Munoz was in there. Was he number 8?
Yeah. So the Mariners have been well represented, but this was kind of surprising. I mean, I assume Luis Castillo is not one of the top two pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, yeah. Rounding out the rest of the list. So at number 4, where do I leave off? 4, Scherzer, Max Scherzer. Number 3, Carlos Rodon. So we're waiting for number 2.
I think maybe
Verlander's going to be in there, right?
Say that again.
Verlander skipped 5, but yeah, now we got him.
We skipped 5.
Yeah. Sandy Alcantara.
Oh, okay.
Alcantara. Yeah.
All right, so we're waiting on 1 and 2.
But wasn't Verlander the Cy Young winner?
Yeah, he'll be one of these two.
Okay, that,
but I don't think
I'd spoil that.
I don't think Luis Castillo is going to be the other guy.
Who's the other guy?
I don't know.
You have no idea.
I would think if he were on this list, he might be a little lower. I don't think he's 1 or 2 in the league. As much as we love him, and he's a massive addition to this team. I don't. That would be surprising if they had him that high. Certainly.
Well, and I don't really care. We have him. That's all that matters. I mean, and that was interesting. I didn't know that they called him the Rock, and sort of the weight that he carries in there. And that I feel like, and I think somebody said that, and I can't remember if it was Jerry or Justin today, but talking about how he just takes them to a different level.
Yeah,
he changed the way the team thinks. Mm-hmm. About their chances of winning. It's like he goes in thinking we're supposed to win.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just fantastic addition. Fantastic addition to the team and it gives you a certain level of confidence probably as an offense, feeling like, all right, we don't have to score 5 runs. We don't have to score, a bunch of runs in order to get a win out of this. He's a guy that's going to keep you in that game more often than not. And now they're just going through all the pitchers that didn't make it just to drag it out
missed.
Even further.
Yeah, so that's
Lefko's
11 through 16
he's
there.
Bubbling mad back there.
Yeah.
I mean, so, it's just going to be the most dramatic tease we've ever done on the show.
Yeah.
Like, all right, well, we're going to go to break, and you don't know number 1.
Are they going to unveil 1 and 2 before we go to break? I don't think they are, to be honest. This pace is not great.
Well, what do you think about Cal? I mean, does he have a chance?
Oh, I think he's certainly got a chance. It's his, for position players, like we talked about before, I don't know how much they're weighing defense versus what they do offensively, because you know, certain guys are very good in one dominant one category, the other category you go, it wasn't so great. But, you know, so if they're looking at defense, he had a huge year here, obviously, beyond clutch moments. If you just look at his offensive numbers in totality, you're going, he didn't hit for a great average. I mean, he got off to a brutal start. So I don't know how impressive it looks, you know, across the board when you're just analyzing the full thing without looking at those individual moments where he was crucial. But his defense was very good. He calls a great game. You know, he's throwing out runners at a decent clip. So I would think he would crack the top 10, but I'll admit to not being that dialed into every other catcher in the league and in how they're doing. But is Verlander 2? They've got him at 2.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I don't know who 1 is. I really don't.
Would it be Dylan Cease?
No, he just missed.
He was one of the missed
guys. Is he one of the ones that missed? Because he was 3rd in the league in ERA.
Yeah.
Manoah didn't make it
either.
I'm
going to Google, who's a good pitcher?
Who's a good pitcher? Huh. Who's going to be number 1?
Best pitcher in MLB. How about that, Mike?
What if it is
it
Castillo?
It was Ver. I mean, that? Huh? Yeah.
What if it is Castillo?
He didn't even make the most. The
could be number 1 then.
Yeah, that means one place they can be.
How did he not make the list of those that didn't make it?
Now, you think it's number 1?
No.
Best in baseball right now?
No. Come on.
He was dominant in the playoffs. I'm going to twist myself into thinking this.
Maybe.
After I said
I
it was
know.
Impossible.
Their parameters are maybe a little goofy in that they're not taking last year into account so much as what they believe they're going to be going into this year.
Maybe like Luis Garcia.
My goodness. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who would be number 1. I thought it would have been Verlander. He was ridiculous. He had an ERA under 2.
Yeah. I can't imagine who that must be. Boy, they're really dragging this out,
really
aren't they? Yeah.
We can't.
Lefko was back there yelling at the TV during the break.
Is this it? Is this is after catcher?
Catcher's the last thing.
We've gotten everybody.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll... I don't know. So there you go. He's number 2. We'll leave it to your own imagination. See who's
Kenny
number 1.
Guy.
Yeah, that Brian Kenny. Shut your big yapper, huh?
He ruined it.
You're killing everybody.
We can't
everybody.
Unveil number 1.
Ugh. Are they?
If it's
up?
Luis Castillo, we'll break in to programming.
Yeah. It'll be breaking news. Yeah, they are squeezing the life out of this one. All right. Well, we'll see who the number 1 pitcher according to MLB Network is. Who they view as number 1. Meanwhile, we'll catch up with new Mariners second baseman Colton Wong coming up next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.